You are listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press. On this edition, we'll look at two incidents more than a decade apart in which police officers shot and killed someone and said they confused their tasers with their guns.
The prosecution said that even in taser confusion cases, officers don't reach across their body that way. This will be an issue in the Dante Wright case, but, you know, the taser looks very different. It's yellow. It's got like a safety release. It's got a laser sight. The gun, on the other hand, is in a holster that requires thumb and finger action to get the gun out. It is much heavier. It's black. Very, very different weapons. But that said, there are legitimate confusion cases.
I'm Laura Wenis, and this is Civic. Before we get started, at the Public Press, which is Civic's parent organization, we've been working really hard during this pandemic to pursue angles we're not seeing much coverage of elsewhere, or to take a more systemic look at the issues that are surfacing in the headlines. The San Francisco Public Press is a nonprofit, and we're inspired by the public radio model. That's the idea that people who are able to support the work that we do so everyone can have access to it without paywalls or ads. If you think we're onto something, we'd very much appreciate if you could show your support. You can do that by going to sfpublicpress.org/donate or by helping us get the word out about this show. Subscribe on whichever podcast platform you use or leave us a review. It really does help, so thanks. In the early hours of New Year's Day 2009, BART police officer Johannes Messerly shot and killed 22-year-old Oscar Grant on the Fruitvale Station platform. Messerly later said he'd meant to tase Grant, not shoot him. The incident prompted major demonstrations and investigations into policing practices. But about 12 years later, on April 11th, 2021, police officer Kim Potter shot and killed 20-year-old Dante Wright in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. And soon after, the police chief of her department said Potter had intended to use her taser and shot Wright accidentally. Wright's killing took place just 10 miles from where former police officer Derek Chauvin was on trial, charged with murdering George Floyd last May. Law enforcement in the United States killed an average of more than 3 people every day of testimony in that trial, according to the New York Times. To get a better sense of how much these two shootings blamed on taser confusion have in common, and how the Chauvin trial and verdict are changing the conversation about killings by law enforcement, I spoke with a journalist who covered Oscar Grant's death and Johannes Messerly's trial extensively. Damian Bulwa is now the director of news at the San Francisco Chronicle. And so we want to talk about looking back on the killing of Oscar Grant. I'm just curious, I wanted to start by asking you, what were your initial thoughts when you heard about Dante Wright's death?
Well, when I heard about the story in Dante Wright's death that the officer had mistaken the gun for the taser, I immediately thought of the Oscar Grant case, of course, because, you know, that was at the center of the case, and there, it's pretty rare, but it does seem to happen about once a year around the country. So I immediately thought about how this was apparently going to be the big question in this case as well. And you know, I think also a little bit stunned that it's still happening. You know, in the Oscar Grant case, there's still a question about whether that really happened, whether there really was taser confusion. Mm-hmm. But in the Dante Wright case, if that is indeed what happened, sort of shocking to think that it's still going on and that they haven't figured out a way to completely get rid of that.
Did you say this happens around the country about once a year, specifically that officers confuse their taser with their sidearm, with their firearm?
Yeah, that's what the studies and the articles that I'm seeing say. A little bit less than once a year. So it's happened over the course of the last 20 years. It's happened more than a dozen times, according to reports.
And why don't we hear about those cases?
Well, we do. But, you know, some of them are more covered locally. And, you know, not all of them are fatal. I sort of see them cropping up. Unfortunately, there are so many police killings around the country every year. I think there's about 1,000 that we don't hear about all of them, even though these are right. A very unusual circumstance.
Yeah. So there are some really clear parallels here between how these shootings unfolded. As you already noted, the officers both said they were going for their tasers, but instead drew their guns. And then after they had shot the person that they'd been trying to subdue, they both made these loud exclamations about, you know, like, oh my God, I shot them, obviously using expletives. And both of these officers were arrested, and they've both been charged in connection with the shooting. And in both cases, the men who were killed were fathers to young children. Am I missing any other important parallels besides those?
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of parallels in the cases, you know, even from the arrests, where there was a question about whether the men should have been arrested in the first place, a question about whether if a taser was the weapon they were going for, whether that was proper. The big difference in the cases is that in the Dante Wright case, you had this video that was released fairly quickly, and the officer, the police chief, saying that that it was taser confusion. And that message was put out, and that explanation was put out before the charging decision was made. And I believe the charging decision is manslaughter so far against this officer. That was not what happened in the Oscar Grant case. In the Oscar Grant case, there was no explanation about why the shooting had happened in the first days. And in fact, the officer, Johannes Messerli, resigned rather than giving a statement to BART police in that case. So the district attorney made a decision to charge murder against Johannes Messerli. And part of the reason why that decision was made is because the district attorney said Johannes Messerli had provided no explanation for the shooting at that point.
Huh. And then later in court, it came out that he said, actually, I was trying to go for my taser and I really regret this and I didn't realize what I was doing.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It came out later that was going to be the defense. And, and, you know, in the preliminary hearing in that matter, the judge in Oakland court heard that and said that he didn't believe it and sent the case to trial. So that was just a preliminary hearing of the evidence. The judge then at trial was held in Los Angeles after a change of venue, did believe that and say that the evidence supported that. And the jury appears to have also thought that that's what happened.
That is fascinating. I also want to bring up on that point that Kim Potter, the officer who shot Dante Wright, was head of the local police union, and she was also involved with the training of officers, I believe including with use of force. Whereas Messerli, I mean, he was, you know, he was youngish. He was under 30 at the time. He, as far as I know, he was not, you know, in a position of mentorship or teaching to other officers necessarily. Does experience factor into the conversation of how this could have happened?
Well, I think experience is always a part of these conversations, and it's one of the really unfortunate things that you see in policing, in that these situations, you know, in general, the training is obviously not good enough in a lot of cases. Officers just don't get in these situations very often. Some officers never pull their gun and fire it in their entire career. So, you know, it's so rare, and what clearly happens is that officers in a lot of cases don't make the best decisions when they are finally in this position. And the question then is, can you do training that is strong enough and real enough to somehow prepare officers for these situations that happen so infrequently? So in the Dante Wright case, yes, she had a lot of experience. Again, in the Oscar Grant case, that training was a big issue. BART had a terrible taser policy at the time. They had not much training. I think it was a day. They did not have enough tasers to go around the department. And we wrote about this. And so the officers were sharing and swapping tasers between shifts.
Wow.
And what that meant was not only that, you know, that they didn't have their own taser, it also meant that they didn't necessarily have their own holster. And so sometimes would have to settle for whichever holster they could get, which meant that sometimes the taser might be in a different position, whether you're left-handed or right-handed, or you're wearing it on your strong side, your hand side, or your opposite side. And so they had a really terrible policy there that it's hard to say how much it may or may not have contributed, but, you know, you would hope that that police departments would have much better training today.
Well, it's funny you say that because I was going to ask you if you know or remember if how much discussion there was about where exactly in relation to the gun the taser was actually placed on him, on his body. But it sounds like that actually could have changed even from shift to shift.
Yeah. So this it turned out at trial that Johannes Messerli was wearing the taser on the opposite side. So left side had to reach across his body. And this was the big question at the trial, because I think sometimes people forget that the prosecution in Alameda County, and also the family of Oscar Grant, all felt that, in fact, there was no taser confusion, that Johannes Messerli had meant to shoot him and was making up this defense. And then obviously Johannes Messerli and the defense said, no, all the evidence points to the confusion. And so, how he grabbed the taser was a big point of contention. And the prosecution said that even in taser confusion cases, officers don't reach across their body that way. And also, this will be an issue certainly in the Dante Wright case. But, the taser looks very different. It's yellow. It's got like a safety release. It's got a laser sight. The gun, on the other hand, is in a holster that requires thumb and finger action to get the gun out. It is much heavier. It's black. Very, very different weapons. But that said, there are legitimate confusion cases.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be curious to see what the conversation is like around taser confusion and the potential for that with somebody who has so much more experience than Johannes Messerli did.
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult. The law, the law around police shootings is very difficult in terms of what the officer should be charged with. A lot of the codes don't really fit, for a job where you make possibly in this case is a deadly mistake. Mm. It's very complicated, and it doesn't just involve, what should be the consequences for that apparent mistake in the Dante Wright case. It also, factors in, okay, should she have even tased him?
Right, exactly.
And what about the decision there?
Yeah. Yeah, the Reverend Wanda Johnson, Oscar Grant's mother, told CNN that in both cases, what happened after, the video footage came out, both resulted in police chief resignations. Kim Potter, who shot and killed Dante Wright, she resigned, and so did the chief in that department, Tim Gannon. And the Brooklyn Center City Council had actually passed a resolution in support of relieving both of them of their duties. I'm wondering, how did the equivalent, these resignations or people being people leaving their positions, how did that unfold in the Oscar Grant case?
Yeah, well, the BART police chief at that time was Gary G. And, not only was he under immense public pressure over the shooting, but the officers also had turned against him, said they had no confidence in the chief. So he was really facing it from all sides. And also, our reporting was showing that the investigation into the Oscar Grant shooting was sort of botched from the beginning. There were a lot of mistakes. And then the training, including the taser training, was substandard. And the department was in need of a lot of improvement and reform. And so he really was facing it from all sides. And I think that, the decision there is partly the chief that got us in this mess. Is that the chief we want to go forward with what needs to happen, which is reform? And usually it's not the right person.
Can you talk more about the botched investigation?
Yeah, I mean, it's a long time ago, but as I recall, the first issue was just that there were all of these witnesses. If people can remember that this is a train that pulls up to Fruitvale Station in Oakland just after the New Year, and people are coming back from San Francisco, and Oscar Grant is pulled off of the train by Tony Peroni, the first officer at the scene, and who begins to sort of rough him up and eventually ends up making it.
And this was because there had been a call about a fight happening on the train, right?
Yes, and in fact, Oscar Grant was in a fight. Now, however, the police did not necessarily know that at the time. I mean, that they had just information that someone was in a fight, but he had been in a scuffle. And ultimately, it doesn't look like it looks like sort of a mutual situation, an altercation, and probably not necessarily a crime even by Oscar in that situation. So there's all of these people spilled out on the platform. Oscar's being roughed up and his friends, and then people start recording, and then the shooting happens, and the train leaves the station, and there's all these witnesses, and it's goodbye, and they let them all go, and they let them all go home. So that was sort of the first, the first big mistake, and there wasn't a great effort to find video. You know, that was I think they got lucky early on to get some of the videos that they would have had they, taken it very, very seriously. So the other major thing was that Bart was not honest about what had happened right in the aftermath, and they sort of refused to say why Oscar was even being arrested and give like basic details about what had happened, and that really frustrated people.
Yeah, that seems like it would also affect the trial ultimately, the criminal trial. Did that come up?
The criminal trial ended up being so heavily focused on the mistake, because once Johannes Messerli said, I meant to tase him, he was sort of acknowledging that he had indeed wrongly shot him. So the trial ended up being heavily focused on that question of, was that true? And then, if it was true, then what's the proper punishment?
Right. And you already pointed out that in the case of Kim Potter, there's also potentially a question as to why she chose to tase Dante Wright, if that is indeed what she chose to do or consciously was thinking that she was going to do. Was that questioned at all in Messerli's case?
Well, sure. I mean, in the Messerli case, there was a question about whether he should have tased him, and the prosecution's point was really, if he really was meaning to tase him, okay, so again, some people kind of can imagine this video, which is obviously terrible, but a lot of people have seen it, where Johannes Messerli has Oscar Grant face chest down. There's another officer, Tony Prony, who I mentioned before. He's got his knee on Oscar Grant's neck. He is holding him against the concrete platform.
Really?
So the two officers are on him. They are trying to arrest him wrongly for resisting, because, in fact, the officers had been the aggressors in that situation. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to handcuff Oscar, get his hands behind his back. There's a question about whether Oscar was resisting. Bart says he was, but prosecution basically said he wasn't resisting. He was just very awkwardly put on this platform. He's over one of his friends. One of his friends' legs is under him. He's, wow. It's very awkward for his arms. And so at the last moment there, Messerli is struggling to get that second hand behind his back, and he stands up and he fires one shot. What the prosecution said was, if you needed to tase him because you thought he had a gun and you thought he was a danger to you at that moment, that you wouldn't stand up and go for the taser, because in that scenario, you'd be afraid that Oscar, who you're thinking has a gun, would wheel around and fire. And so if indeed someone had a gun, then you would want to stay in contact with them. You would want to pin them to the ground. I mean, in a situation, you'd actually want to shoot them potentially if they were trying to shoot you. And the prosecution said it just didn't make sense for him to use the taser in that situation, if indeed he thought Grant had a gun.
I'm speaking with Damian Bulwa, director of news at the San Francisco Chronicle. So looking ahead a little bit, skipping ahead to the actual charges, in the Messerli case, he was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter. He ended up serving 11 months in county jail. Kim Potter has been charged with second-degree manslaughter. Do you have any expectations, based on your coverage of the Messerli trial, of what will happen in Kim Potter's case?
I think, unfortunately, I it's hard for me to really look into what might happen, especially in Minnesota. They have Right. said, I believe, that other charges may be added, and the particular laws really matter, because You know, sometimes you know, the use of a firearm can add time. You know, there's you know, depending on what state you're in, there's discretion in terms of sentencing. Certainly in the Oscar Grant case, because it was involuntary manslaughter, that is what limited the punishment. And, you know, the jury found him guilty of use of a firearm, which would have, but Johannes Messerli, which would have added a lot of time. But the judge said, no, you can't, if you, jury, hey, if you felt like you meant to use the taser, you can't add the firearm charge.
Hmm. Yeah. And I also want to go back to something else that you mentioned earlier, which is moving this trial to LA, because it seems to me that in both cases, there's this concern kind of from the justice system or the courts that the case should be taken out of the local context because of, you know, local community uproar about them. I think Brooklyn Center's mayor called on the governor to transfer criminal prosecution to the state attorney general's office rather than having the case handled by a county prosecutor. And in fact, that's also what the governor did last May when he appointed Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison as the lead prosecutor on the Derek Chauvin case, which I also want to talk about. What's this concern about it being handled locally? What's that about?
Well, that is a whole area of expertise that obviously some lawyers have, where, you know, it comes down to polling. It comes down to looking at the community and deciding and making an argument to a judge whether people are going to, you know, be able to put aside, you know, their feelings, whether they already have an opinion about the case, whether it's so big and political that they, you know, that there will just be too much, they're being bring too much baggage into the case. Now, the other side of that would be that, you know, jurors do have an ability to set that aside and follow the law, and that's what they do all the time. You know, the other side of that is you don't necessarily want to move it from the community where, you know, your jury pool might reflect the community better. And certainly we saw that, I think, you know, a lot of concern in the Rodney King case where it was moved, and concern about the politics of the jury pool. You know, it opens up a lot. But certainly I think there are cases where there's a genuine concern that people have strong feelings. Scott Peterson, people will recall, was moved. It was just a massive case in the Central Valley, and so it was moved actually into the Bay Area.
I am curious about what has come of this locally. It's obviously hard for you to speculate on what might happen, you know, most of the way across the country in a totally different state and jurisdiction, in terms of reform or response to this situation. But Bart Police said it was going to change things. Has there been meaningful change in policing on Bart since Oscar Grant was killed?
Yeah, I mean, I don't cover Bart anymore, but I think there, you know, there have been changes. We haven't seen, you know, a lot of incidents in the last several years. I mean, there have still been cases, but there haven't been a lot. I think, you know, Bart did reform itself. And, you know, in a lot of ways, that police department, I mean, they made a lot of big mistakes, you know, in terms of, you know, being aggressive, in terms of training. I mean, at one point we pointed out that Bart had cameras in all of their cars, but they were mostly fake.
Right.
So they, you know, went to reform that. They had a series of reforms that were recommended by an outside group, and did that, and they had to put on all those reforms. So, yes, I think they've definitely improved as an agency. But, you know, I think in a larger way, you know, people are frustrated that there hasn't been more success at limiting the number of police killings across the Bay Area and across the country. You know, we're still seeing similar numbers. You know, there's just a lot of frustration in terms of how can we bring this number down? How can we de-escalate these situations that we're still seeing? I mean, we just saw the same officer kill two people in Contra Costa County in Danville. And that officer's now been charged, but he's killed a second person. And so, you know, a lot of frustration that we haven't figured out a way to improve.
And too often also officers who have some kind of disciplinary history or who may have used excessive force or have been accused of using excessive force but who weren't criminally charged, they can move from department to department without this necessarily following them around, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's sort of two issues there. One is certainly officers have been able to move around and after discipline, and there's very little public transparency about that because the records have not been available. There has been some change in that legislatively where some cases are now public. You can find out if an officer, for example, has a history of being dishonest or has a history of using fatal force and what happened in that investigation. But a lot of other discipline is still walled off. The other issue is that in some cases, officers do something that maybe is public, a shooting that is on video or a situation where they are disciplined or even fired, but they end up, you know, in arbitration and winning their job back, or they end up prevailing in that situation. Mm-hmm. And so they're able to keep their job. And that's, you know, that's a tough situation. And you think people can disagree on that because, you know, some of those cases, the officers, legitimately win their case. And so they have to be able to continue their career. But that certainly doesn't give, you know, the public a lot of confidence, especially if it was a case that led to a big civil payout and an officer is staying on the job, or if an officer has multiple shootings, you know, it doesn't give the public, you know, a lot of confidence. But certainly if the officers are cleared, they are able to continue.
Looking again at just criminal charges, there's been some concern voiced by police unions and police activists that the Derek Chauvin case is setting a precedent of some kind, or that this is, you know, a tide is turning and the chances that officers who use force and who are criminally charged will be convicted and sent to prison has now risen because of this verdict, or that this is, you know, sort of an indication of a sea change. And I'm curious if you have any thoughts about that concern, and also if you see the conversation about the Kim Potter case sounding any different than the conversations were sounding at the time about the Johannes Messerli case, in terms of, you know, what people's expectations are. Really, I'm asking, I guess, have people's attitudes changed when it comes to what should happen to officers who are criminally charged for using force?
Yeah, I mean, so much has changed. You know, the big change in the Oscar Grant case was video, which at that time was really unusual, and it changed everything. And now you just expect to see every shooting from many different angles immediately. And it's, you know, and we're still dealing with what that means. And it's obviously bringing a lot of accountability. From a legal perspective, we are seeing officers charged. Maybe not as many as some people would like. And certainly there are places in the Bay Area where still counties where they haven't charged anyone. But you are seeing cases charged. Alameda County right now has two. San Francisco has a couple. Contra Costa County now has one. So there, you know, we've got some active cases where officers are being charged. I think you may see more in the future, you know, given the video that's out there. But yes, it's alarming to police officers that I speak to and police unions and police lawyers who say, hey, this is, you really shouldn't be charging officers with crimes when they are, you know, have a good faith self-defense. You know, we put them out there in a tough job, and when they make a decision, and in hindsight, it's perhaps the wrong one, but it was made in a very difficult scenario. We shouldn't be charging these officers with crimes and putting them in jail. And so you do hear that a lot. And you know, I guess the way I respond to a lot of that is, you know, I certainly can see both sides of that. It is a very difficult job. And obviously these situations are, human beings don't seem to be able to respond very well to a lot of these situations. It's very, very difficult. But what I would say is, I think, you know, there seems to be a lot of failure of reform around what happens before that last decision is made. It's really, a lot of it is the decision, you know, that gets you to that point. And maybe, you know, tactically, we've seen a lot of shootings in the Bay Area where you say to yourself, if the goal was to create sort of a de-escalation and create distance and make sure that, that it doesn't come to this, we're still seeing a lot of
time distance.
We're still seeing a lot of shootings that where the officer clearly didn't do that, and you know we're seeing officers fire into cars instead of just get out of the way. And what's the worst? You know, and in some shootings, the worst case scenario is that someone gets away. You know, and you know that's not always the worst scenario if someone gets away. There's a lot of people getting you know that. You know, oh, I don't want this guy with a gun to get away. Well, a lot of people have guns. And, you know, maybe we need to rethink the tactics.
Yeah. Well, are there any other thoughts that come to mind that you really wanted to put out there that I didn't give you a chance to talk about when it comes to these two cases and their parallels and differences?
I think people will be interested in seeing how this case plays out and the taser question. But, you know, I think it's important to note that even well over a decade on, there is still a disagreement over whether Oscar Grant, whether it really was taser confusion or not. And obviously, very strong feelings on both sides. And obviously, the defense, Johannes Messerli's defense, believes very strongly that has been proven, and they wish that question still wasn't around. And on the other hand, Oscar Grant's family feels like it never was able to get full closure because the officer was never totally honest about what happened.
Right. Well, thanks so much for looking back on your work and talking with me about this.
Oh, thanks for having me.
That was Damian Bulwa, Director of News at the San Francisco Chronicle. Read his coverage at sfchronicle.com. I'm Laura Wenis, and you've been listening to Civic. Civic is produced at KSFP LP 102.5 FM in San Francisco. Our theme music is by John Dillon. Our team includes producer and contributor Mel Baker and assistant producer Liana Wilcox. KSFP is a project of the San Francisco Public Press, a nonprofit investigative newsroom. Find our reporting at sfpublicpress.org.